From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action, filling in for Tony Perkins today. Well, the White House administration is cracking down on Big Pharma by requiring companies to advertise drug prices in their commercials. Representative Debbie Lesko of Arizona moved for yet another unanimous consent in pushing for a floor vote on H.R. 962, the Born Alive Act, bringing the total to 41 GOP attempts to get it to a vote. And just out, Representative Michael Burgess of Texas and Representative Martha Roby of Alabama joined 116 other members in sending a letter to the FDA urging closer oversight of illegal mail-order abortion drugs. This is our Friday edition. Welcome. And as early as next week, the deceptively named Equality Act could be headed to the House floor for a vote. Dr. Michelle Cretella, pediatrician and executive director of the American College of Pediatricians, has thought through some of the incredibly dangerous ramifications of the act and joins me in the first segment. In my second segment, California has okayed new sex ed curriculum guidelines for teachers, despite objections from parents and other protesters. And I'll talk with Rebecca Friedrichs, author of Standing Up to Goliath and director of Kids in Country, who was at the protest rally in Sacramento, California this week. At the bottom of the hour, Converse has debuted a line of LGBT-friendly shoes and an ad campaign featuring an 11-year-old boy in drag. I'll talk with Robert Kuykendall, executive director of SecondVote.com. And in my last segment, Mother's Day is this Sunday. Happy early Mother's Day to those of you listening. I wanted to have a conversation about the challenges that working mothers face and where the balance is between children and work. My guest will be Meg Kilgannon, Education Research Associate for Family Research Council and fellow mother. Days before the midterm elections in 2018, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi voted to make passing the Equality Act one of her top legislative priorities, and she was not kidding. The liberal left continues to push their radical agenda against American values through the Equality Act, and it is set for a vote this coming Wednesday, as early as Wednesday. A reminder as we start this program to call your congressman, your congresswoman, 202-224-3121, and voice your opposition to this act. More resources will be available online, TonyPerkins.com. Follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins. You can follow me as well at Sarah P. Perry. And definitely call your representative. But joining me now to discuss the Equality Act, and particularly treating children, is Dr. Michelle Cretella, a pediatrician and the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Cretella, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be here.
So let me give just a few overall specs. And I know we've talked about this before, but the Equality Act proposes the amendments to 10 federal laws with 60 amendments and affects everything from public accommodation, facilities, education, federal grants and loans, sale or rental of housing, credit transactions, and jury service. Various provisions would be enforced by the EEOC, the DOJ, and or the courts, and it really must be stated and cannot be overstated that this proposed legislation that will be voted on very soon completely guts the protections of the 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And that, listeners, is something you need to remember. There is no opt-out religious dissension right. This is a massive, massive power transfer to the federal government through an obsessive micromanaging of intersectional identity politics. So, in other words, it is majorly bad news. So, let's talk about this, particularly because this is an episode where we'll talk about parenting and motherhood. Let's talk about the efforts in parental rights and how this affects the rights of a parent to seek appropriate treatment and medical care for a child who might, for example, indicate that they don't believe they were born in the right body. So let's start first with the health professionals in this equation. How would this force health professionals to, in your opinion, do harm to these kids?
Sure. Okay. So taking a step back, I think it's really super important for all listeners to realize this law, if it passes, if this bill becomes law, it impacts everyone. And a better name for it is the Death to Christianity Act. Okay. That's going to be the umbrella. And I'll get back to showing how it obviously impacts everyone more than Christians, but Christianity will have, it will cease to be publicly practiced. It'll become against the law. As health professionals who are dedicated to first doing no harm, this act would require us to affirm every child or adult who is confused about their gender. We would have to affirm them and put them on puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and or refer them for cross-sex surgeries. What's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is even the secular science does not support it. When transgender-identified adults go for the hormones, go for the surgeries, and are followed long-term, their problems don't go away. Their mental health issues persist. And 10, 20, 30 years down the line, their suicide rates are 19 times greater than the general population. So here we are. We have physically healthy children, physically healthy adults, and yet we will be mandated to put them on toxic drugs, drugs that are going to increase their risks of heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, cancers, and actually also be forced to remove healthy body parts. Okay, this is and in terms of kids being put on these hormones, it's sterilizing them. So chemical castration, sterilization, bodily mutilation. That's a huge violation of first do no harm. Great concern for Christian doctors, but great concern for any doctor who subscribes to the traditional Hippocratic Oath. You asked about parent rights. Parents will not be able to object. Why? Because this will be the law of the land. And the law of the land says you, if this passes, you cannot deny a patient, whether it be a child or an adult, you cannot deny them any medical care. Doesn't matter that they're a child. If an adult can go in and request the hormones, so can a child. If an adult can go in and have healthy breasts or healthy genitals lopped off, so can that child. Parent rights go away.
And if you have a kid, for example, who goes to a school counselor or school administration and says, I don't tell my parents this, but when I'm at school, I identify as a boy, you're automatically involving not only the school, but then those schools are obligated to provide therapeutic services under this law, if it were to be passed, that could entirely violate not only the parental rights, but the religious objections that those parents might have in the first place, in addition to any doctor referred to for therapy who might also have a religious objection.
Exactly. So I think the issue is first do no harm. And so it's a violation of anyone and everyone, regardless of their religion. Anyone who wants to stand up and say, hey, I'm a parent, this is my child, and I don't want you harming my child, you lose that right. You lose that right. It's gone. And schools will not even have to tell you that the child went to them and said, oh, you know, I think I'm a girl today, or I think I'm a boy today. You are completely left out of the loop. As a parent, you are completely left out.
So let's talk a little bit about the science behind this notion of gender identity, because we are hearing so much from the transgender movement, and there is such a huge push from corporate America, and I'll talk about that later in the show. But we're seeing this so commonly referred to now as widely accepted scientific fact. You and I both know that that's not the case, but explain to us, as a medical professional, why the notion of gender identity is indeed not scientifically based.
So the simplest way to think about this is, look, people have a sex. I have a medical test for that. I can look at any one of your cells, and I'm going to find your sex chromosomes. Sex is real. It's innate there at fertilization, and it is with you throughout your entire life and never changes. Gender identity, that's how a person identifies, right? It's right there in the word. That's something in the mind. There's no biological test for gender identity because our identities, our self-awareness, what we believe about ourselves is shaped by our entire lived experience, not just our genes, not just our hormones, right? It's environment, it's nature, right, and nurture. So it is a lie. It is a scientific lie to say that anyone is born with a hardwired gender identity. No, everyone is born either male or female, and as we develop, Dr. Lawrence Kohlberg, developmental psychologist, identified three stages that children go through, such that by age seven, children finally understand that, oh, I am a boy or a girl, and sex is permanent. Earlier than age seven, children may actually believe that just changing your clothing or putting on makeup can change your sex. These are stages of psychological development that have been documented in children. So it develops. It's not something that's hardwired. And as far as the Equality Act, it's also important for listeners to understand that this act, because it enshrines gender identity as a protected class, erases women's rights, erases women's privacy.
Yes, it does.
And it's because now a boy or a man just has to say, hey, I'm female, and automatically we have to let that boy or that man into the girls' room, locker room, women's shelters, women's prisons, on girls' sports teams. We have boys who are running away, literally running away with girls' track and field awards and scholarships. I mean, this is a great affront to women's rights. Our foster children, as a pediatrician, I care about all kids, but especially the kids in our foster system. If this bill becomes law, then there are over 400,000 children in our nation's foster care system being taken care of by religious-based adoption and foster providers. They're going to be forced out of business because, according to this law, those agencies must support transgender ideology. They must be willing to place kids with same-sex parents. They must be willing to put kids who are gender-confused through the hormones, et cetera. So agencies like Catholic Charities will be forced out of the foster care system in all 50 states.
Dr. Michelle Cretella has been my guest. I wish we had more time, but coming up next, California's okayed new sex ed guidelines for teachers, despite objections that include gender identity. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws That's frc.org/ABA laws.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry. I am filling in today for Tony Perkins on this Friday edition. Let me wrap up the last segment by encouraging you again to call your Congress member, 202-224-3121. We could have a vote on the Equality Act as early as next week. Do not be fooled by the name. It is not equality for anyone when it concerns your religious beliefs. We have more resources at frc.org/EqualityAct2019. So the California Department of Education has approved a controversial sex education guideline set for public school teachers. And it encourages classroom discussions about, you guessed it, gender identity and LGBT relationships. Did remove 5 resources and books, which were absolutely horrific, including one that explained sex to students as young as kindergarten. And of course, the social justice warriors praise the new recommendation for giving attention to a community that is often left out of sex education in a push for comprehensive sex education. But some parents and conservative groups have assailed the more than 700 pages of guidelines, calling it an assault on parental rights and saying that it exposes children to ideas about sexuality and gender that should be taught at home. Joining me now is my friend Rebecca Friedrichs, author of Standing Up to Goliath and the founder of For Kids and Country. Welcome, Rebecca, back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's so great to be here again. I wish it was under better circumstances, but
yes,
thanks for having me.
I do, too. And let me tell you that California is really sort of the latest in a national trend of these comprehensive sex ed guidelines that include gender identity and sexual orientation, including Colorado, New Jersey, Illinois, Washington, and closer to where we are here in Washington, D.C. So you and other concerned parents oppose the proposal to make these radical changes. Can you tell me a little bit about your rally Wednesday at the Capitol in Sacramento?
I sure can. I wasn't able to be there myself, but a few hundred parents and some teachers were and faith leaders were on the Capitol steps, and they once again went inside to the Education Committee to voice their concerns. Last time they were out there a month ago, over 200 people voiced concerns against this framework, and less than 10 were for it. And, of course, they were from organizations like Planned Parenthood Unlimited and Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. They weren't just boots on the ground parents.
Sure.
So these folks just keep fighting and fighting, and we keep writing editorials, and most people agree with us, but very powerful organizations are steamrolling this through the teachers' unions and Planned Parenthood and ACLU and other players.
In fact, I've read a piece that you were quoted in, and you obviously were a very sharp critic of the policy itself, and you've said that California proved its blind devotion to state and national teachers' unions, and you noted a victory for radical social, sexual, and political beliefs. So explain to us how the teachers' unions are involved, because you understand that issue extremely well.
I do. I taught 28 years public schools here in California, and in fact, the only reason I resigned this year is to fight teachers' unions full-time, because they're so out of control. They are not representing the hearts or the true desires of most teachers. We just want to teach. We want to protect children. We want to do a great job, but these unions have gone off the rails. And when I was a union leader for a time trying to make a difference from within, I saw with my own eyes that these teachers' unions are truly just a political action committee for the far left, very involved with pushing the LGBTQ agenda and pushing all far-left agendas, writing their talking points. And when I say blind devotion, that's exactly what it is, because these leaders, these politicians, have their hands in their pockets of these very wealthy unions, and they'll do whatever the unions want, not what the people want, the taxpayers.
So can you explain a little bit about this particular curriculum? And we obviously have to avoid certain words, and here's the irony, is that these words are included in the curriculum, but we can't say them over the air, or we will violate obscenity laws.
Yeah. I know. It's stunning. It's stunning. Our little elementary school children can be exposed to things we can't even discuss on the radio. So I think what I can share with your listeners is we are now going into preschool classrooms. And let me repeat again, this is not good and loving teachers. This is union activists masquerading as teachers who have been planted in our schools across the country. They go into these little preschoolers and say, when you were born, your mommy and daddy didn't know your gender, so they assigned you a gender. But really, there is a spectrum of ever-growing number of genders. I've seen as many as 70. Some of those genders are gender queer, non-binary, gender fluid, two-spirit, third gender, all these different genders that they're, can you imagine the confusion for these little children? And I am so offended. I'm so offended as a teacher and as a parent. My job as a teacher is to teach, is to protect these children, to serve them and their parents, and to help them learn to read, write, do arithmetic, learn accurate history. But instead, this whole agenda is being brought into our schools, and then we're not even doing a good job on teaching them the reason they're there to read.
So very, very quickly, in the time we have left, can you tell us if there is an opt-out procedure from some of these lessons?
Well, see, that is the nightmare in this whole thing. The whole gender identity spectrum and all that is being booked under the guise of an anti-bullying campaign, because to stop the bullying of the LGBTQ. So the problem with that is no parent can opt out of any of this. It can show up at any grade level at any time in any subject area. You cannot protect your kids from this except to somehow get these kind of leaders who are pushing these things out of office, pull your child from the schools, because you have no option to opt out.
Well, if there was ever a time period to encourage men and women of good conscience and character to get up and vote, even for positions as seemingly small and insignificant as your local school board, now is the time to do it, because this is a curriculum that is coming to a classroom near you. Rebecca Friedrichs has been my guest. She is fabulous. We will have you back again, because the education truck just keeps moving. You're listening to Washington Watch. Coming up next, we'll discuss a new ad campaign from Converse.
call Jerry. What are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action, and I'm filling in for Tony today. Just a reminder, call the House 202-224-3121. Call your representative. Urge their opposition to the Equality Act. The vote could come as early as next week. Well, Converse is releasing a new line of their popular Chuck Taylor sneakers that focuses on the LGBT community. And the brand is using an 11-year-old drag queen named Desmond is Amazing to promote the line. They released a tweet on Wednesday promoting it with Desmond at the forefront, indicating that they're launching their Pride collection and we're partnering with six people known for being active within the LGBTQ community. Here to talk about the story is Robert Kuykendall with SecondVote.com. And Second Vote recognizes conservative Christians would never fund or vote for benefiting leftist organizations like Planned Parenthood with their first vote at the ballot box. So don't support causes like this through their second vote through ordinary spending and giving. As a conservative watchdog for corporate activism, Second Vote exposes corporations and organizations funding liberal advocacy. Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Sarah, thank you for having me and thank you for that introduction.
Well, let me ask you a question. Were you surprised that Converse is not only supporting the transgender agenda, because Desmond is Amazing is not the only transgender individual who appears in the ad, there is another, but also exploiting a very clearly confused 11-year-old boy who thinks he is a girl to make a buck?
No, Sarah, unfortunately, I'm not surprised by any of this. And let me start by saying, this time of year, at the Second Vote, we have learned that May and into June, we see what is I call the great rainbow washing. With June being Pride Month, we see every corporation, especially the major brands that are all that are across the country, we see them using the LGBT branding, especially the rainbow flag, to just engage in more capitalism. And I'm a fan of capitalism, but capitalism without morality has problems. And I'm not surprised by Converse doing this either, because Converse is actually owned by the Nike Corporation, and Nike has been a supporter of the liberal human rights campaign. Which I call the number one threat to the Bill of Rights in America. Nike's been one of their top corporate supporters for years. So Nike and Converse have been very closely aligned with the LGBT agenda. So this is unfortunately not surprising at all, see.
And what they're doing is they're using an 11-year-old. And what we found appalling was the fact that this child is not only being used to promote the trans agenda, but is being sexualized in the process. Because we know that this young child, this 11-year-old, has opened a drag club for kids in New York and danced at a gay bar in New York at 2 a.m. while patrons threw money at him. So now we're dealing with the sexualization of a child.
Yes, and that's what's really disturbing. Unfortunately, it's unfortunate that we're not shocked by this because the left engages in identity politics all the time. But this is a step where beyond the pale, where they're using a child to not only advance their identity politics strategy, but they're using a child in a manner that, like you said, sexualizes the child. In a way that's really inappropriate, because children do not adopt that identity of self that is based on their biology until they go completely through puberty. You have impressionable children, and what we're really seeing is this is the end result. When we have companies like Converse and Nike who have been engaging in the rainbow washing, who have been and helping groups like Human Rights Campaign advance the left LGBT agenda on matters of marriage, like you said in the introduction on the Equality Act. Human Rights Campaign is one of the preeminent forces behind the Equality Act. When you see these companies, we haven't held them accountable for years. So they are the children like Desmond are really the fruits of years of this kind of activity.
Well, and we also know that this is a child who, according to the research that we've done, his mother has identified as being on the autism spectrum, and his dancing in drag and identifying as sort of this genderless individual is a way to manage his anxiety. Well, let me tell you, as someone who also has a son on the autism spectrum, my son believed he was a firefighter for 3 years and would wear nothing but firefighter costumes. That did not make him a firefighter, try as he may. So what do you encourage, Robert? What should we have our listeners do with Converse?
Sometimes, Sarah, I still believe I'm a professional baseball player, but then I wake up in the morning, I have to go to work in an office and not a baseball field. And yes, as children, we did engage in make believe. But as far as what your listeners need to be thinking about is where we've been asleep at the wheel, where we have let companies like Nike and Converse use children in this way, is one of the reasons is we haven't held them accountable for this kind of activity. We haven't engaged these companies for advancing the left's agenda, and they don't feel bad about doing it because they don't think that we're going to hold them accountable. I just finished my lunch, a late lunch, a few hours ago, and I had some delicious Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is one of the best performing fast food chains because their value.
Yes, they are.
We need to take that same mentality that we do when we support Chick-fil-A, and we need to use that to tell Nike and Converse, we're not going to support your product.
Robert, we've got a wrap for today, but you are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com. Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony Perkins. As a reminder, go to TonyPerkins.com to listen to our podcast and to find out more about the resources and guests that we've referenced here today. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins and follow me if you'd like at Sarah P. Perry. To wrap up our last segment, call Converse Products, if you will, 1-800-428-2667. Let them know how you feel once you've had a chance to view their new line and their use of a young child, 11 years old, to promote a series of LGBT-themed sneakers, the ultimate in woke capitalism for people who hate capitalism but love exploitation and making a buck. Well, this next segment is something about which I could talk for probably more time than the airwaves would allow. USA Today just featured a fascinating article about motherhood, in which the author wrote, Mother's Day brings syrupy ads and greeting card platitudes, but there's dissonance between the ritual and the reality. We celebrate moms who work to meet society's demands, who overextend to fill in the gaps, who never cease sacrificing for those they love. But is this the version of motherhood to revere? American mothers are struggling. Economic, cultural, and even technological changes have dramatically altered the landscape of motherhood in recent decades, piling on new pressures and needs. Well, joining me now to provide her analysis and to discuss what we like to talk about the most, which is our kids, is Meg Kilgannon, Education Research Associate here at FRC, also a friend of mine. Meg, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Sarah, so much for having me. You could have kept Michelle Cretel on for this segment. You had Rebecca Friedrichs on earlier. I'm not sure how I got tapped for this job, but I'm happy to talk with you always.
Well, I will tell you that we have had in our personal conversations a very interesting dialogue about what the iteration of modern motherhood and womanhood looks like. And as we approach Mother's Day on Sunday, my first question is motherhood starting to feel impossible?
I have an interesting perspective, I think, because I was blessed to be able to stay home with my kids for 20 years. My husband worked, and provided for us. And prior to that, I had been in the workforce, and now I am re-entering the workforce, or trying to, and it feels the same, Sarah, I have to say, even with all the technology, even with all the advancement we've had, I still find myself facing struggles that I've heard my working mom friends talk about these years that I've been home. So I think there's no question that things could be different, and I'm not sure how to make that happen, but talking about it will only help, right? That's what we have to do, is discuss it.
So
I was fascinated.
Go ahead.
I was fascinated by that USA Today article, and especially in the things that it did not talk about. The USA Today article didn't talk anything about a community of faith for women to support women. That was completely missing from their analysis. And I know when my children were younger, that was a huge part of where I got support and affirmation and advice and mentoring was from the moms group at our church, the other young mothers and the older mothers in the group. So I think that article doesn't provide a real full picture of what motherhood looks like today, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. And I also think that the notion of motherhood being sort of a tribal affair, right? So generations ago, we raised children alongside our mothers because there were multi-generational living situations. We raised them alongside our friends. We had relatives, siblings close by. But some of the stats that were taken from the USA Today article based on Pew Research Center data were very surprising for me. So back in 75, and I was born in 74, so there you go, I've just dated myself, more than half of mothers stayed home with their kids. And today, 70% of parents work. Childcare costs average between $12,000 and almost $14,000 a year, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So we're looking at a situation where, to start with, for the mothers who are facing, they're straddling that great chasm, right, between motherhood and working. And there doesn't yet seem to be the perfect golden ticket to figure out this dilemma post-sexual revolution, right? So we've gone through sort of the new wave feminism, and we've had the Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly movement against the ERA, which really mobilized housewives in a way that they had never been mobilized before politically. And I think that almost leaves their voices out of the dialogue now. But now we find ourselves faced with one of two options. If we decide that we're being called back into work, we have either private in-home childcare, which is expensive, or we drop off our children at a daycare. So some people have proposed increases in paid family leave, increases in maternity leave, an extension, right? So if we look at the data, we know that we are among the countries for whom the paid maternity benefits are actually the smallest. So do you think there's an argument to be made that we don't economically advantage this childhood process enough? We don't provide enough employee benefits. We don't offer enough subsidies so that we make this work-life balance more manageable.
Right. I think that's true, Sarah. And I think it's even more complicated than you describe. I remember in the early 2000s, my kids were young, and they started to make child care expenses tax deductible. And I thought that was great. But it didn't do anything for our family, because I was home and we were giving up my entire income for me to stay home. And that, so it's really complicated to talk about and to think about. But I do agree that we're at a point now where so many families have two working parents, and you know, it is not nothing to give birth to a child. Lots of women go back to work as soon as 2 weeks after they've given birth to a baby. It's taken it's taken the woman 9 months to grow that child inside her body. And to think that you could have birthed this child into the world and not sleep for 2 weeks and be ready to go back to your job waiting tables or what have you. I mean, that's just really, really a sad state of affairs, frankly, in a civilized society that we have women in this situation. But we do.
I want to ask you this question because we're talking work-life balance here. So did you ever find yourself, when you were home with your four kids, did you ever find yourself going, I'm really sort of questioning the value of what I'm doing, or I'm really struggling with my personal identity because now I've suddenly become, you know, nothing more than sort of the human food train and the person who changes diapers and gets people what they need to subsist in the course of a day?
Sure. Of course. And at the time I was staying home, I felt like I was envied to a degree by my peers who maybe went back to work sooner than they would have preferred, or maybe they would have liked to work part-time, but they could only find a full-time job, you know, and they really needed the income. And I feel like now that has shifted a little bit, and that the stay-at-home mom isn't necessarily as respected as she once was. And that's probably because of these statistics that you talked about earlier. You know, there's just not as many stay-at-home moms as there used to be. And that reality is going to have to be reflected in policy one way or another.
I think what we've got on our hands is sort of an identity crisis for the modern mother, right? She can't sort of figure out how to manage having children, maintaining a family, maintaining a home, maintaining her job, particularly because one of the quotes I thought was interesting from the article, according to Caitlin Collins, who's a professor at Washington University, the idea of what it means to be a good mom is to put your child's needs above your own. And I think obviously we would agree with that. But an ideal worker means being fully dedicated and committed with your undivided attention to your job. In other words, there is nothing that's above that. Now, there was never a point where I was ever working and I had children and I thought, well, my job comes before my kids. And I know that's a very hard sort of equation for people to figure out because you feel like you have divided loyalties. But for me personally, when I left full-time practice to stay home with my kids, and that was not an easy decision for me. I did not get to a point where I went, oh, this is so simple for me to give up 7 years of education and six figures in law school debt to just sit around all day with these kids. And of course, I had this vision of what it was going to be like, and it did not manifest that way. You know,
I like that.
No, it's not. You're planning very orderly days, and you're thinking you're going to be super mom, and sometimes your major success is just making sure that everyone has food and manages to stay clean during the course of any given day. But I found myself with that specialty, with that education going, man, this is much harder than I thought. And I'm really struggling with not being in the workforce. And I think among stay-at-home moms, and I don't know if you ever felt this way, but among stay-at-home moms, there's almost a shame in saying, gosh, it's a struggle some days to be home with these kids and not be at a job. And that's how I felt.
Right. No, I think a lot of women feel that way. It certainly is nice to have a job that has somewhat of a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? But
yes.
I don't know about you when you were staying home, but I don't have any sick days in my contract, Sarah.
Right.
I don't have any vacation time. No time and a half for that midnight throw up that happens, you know.
Right.
That's the job of motherhood, and it's the best job in the world. But it does take its toll. I think too, you know, moms are back in the workforce, and dads are doing more, right? Dads are doing more child rearing with the kids and showing up for more pickups from practice and things like that. And that's really good.
Yes.
But I think that they often don't get credit. Whoever it is who's shouldering the financial burden for the family mostly needs to get big credit for doing that, because it makes everything else possible, right?
Right.
So even if in most cases the man is earning more than the woman, I think that's the case. Maybe it's not anymore, but that should count for him, right? That should count for maybe
right.
he does do a little less, but maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe it's because he's doing more somewhere else.
Well, and there's been research, obviously, that shows men, while they have an increased level of responsibility, they don't necessarily carry the bulk of the responsibility with children or home, which,
right.
as you said, is perfectly fine, because there has to be a trade-off. We can't let
right.
feminist ideals and the ideal of equality, as laudable as it may be, actually get to the point where it disadvantages the children we're trying to raise to have the same ability to operate in sort of an equitable environment. And
right.
my husband did the same
right.
thing. When I quit, I cashed out my 401k and we sold a car. And that was part of how we made that transition possible. But it was not an easy one. You did have those days where you went, man, this is a lot of education to give up to stay home with these little humans. And now
right.
I look back and I will say this, and I know you feel the exact same way. I never go through a moment where I think, man, I really regret doing that. I really regret staying home with
no,
my kids. Not a minute.
Not.
You're in it and
not,
you think there's no right. There's no light at the end of the tunnel, and it's, you know, sort of inscrutable and never ending and dirty and unpredictable and chaotic. And
yep.
then you look back, and now my youngest is 10 and my oldest is 14, and you think, oh man, I'm so glad I did that.
Yes, and you realize it's gone in a blink, the blink of an
yes,
eye.
Yes, it is.
And it's a whole different time. No, I was having a conversation the other day about, you know, juggling things like if I have to be at a meeting now that I'm working, I my husband and I talk and I say, you know, can you cover this pickup or cover this drop off because I'll be at this meeting. And, you know, I still do the bulk of the childcare because that's just my role in our family. But now that I'm reading these articles, it kind of made me wonder, you know, I bet that the moms and dads who've always worked together at the same time and at the same rates, you know, I bet you it's still up to the mom to figure out those pickup and drop-off schedules, right?
Yes, it is.
And to run that childcare end of it because, you know, that's what kind of what we're expected to do, and we're good at it. So I, you know, my hat has always been off to the working moms out there who are doing it all and getting it done. And I just, you know, motherhood is a great gift. And
yes, it is.
People like to write newspaper articles and magazine articles about it and say interesting things about it. But, the bottom line is, it's the best job in the world. It's the joy and the grief of motherhood is like none other. And
Meg, we got a wrap for today. We've got a wrap for today. But to all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. This has been Washington Watch. Go to TonyPerkins.com for more information on what you listened to today.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.